What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Ramswire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Da Silva. You can follow me on Twitter at Cam Da Silva. You can follow the Ramswire on Twitter at The Ramswire. As always, be sure to check out theramswire.usatoday.com for all the best coverage of LA's top football team, and be sure to follow us on Facebook at The Ramswire as well. So today we've got a show following a loss for only the second time this season. The Rams, of course, as you know, did fall to the Bears on Sunday night, dropping the record to 11-2. We'll talk about that game, kind of what it means moving forward for the Rams and how they can respond following this loss, just their second of the season. We'll preview the Eagles game where Carson Wentz is expected to be out. Talk about the new salary cap projection that was released on Tuesday. Discuss kind of where that, how that affects the Rams. Talk about some of their free agents and potential cap casualties. We'll also talk about the offensive line struggling, Sean McVay, his usage of timeouts, and whether that's kind of becoming a problem for the Rams. And then we'll just go into the clinching scenarios for this weekend very briefly, because there is really only one scenario where the Rams can affect their playoff seeding. So we'll jump right into it, talk about this Bears game. It was a really disappointing loss. The Rams lost 15-6. Really, it was honestly the worst game under Sean McVay that they've had the past 2 years, even worse than that 24-7 loss to the Vikings last season. They had 214 yards, 6 points. Both of those were the fewest that they've had under Sean McVay. Only the second time since he's become a coordinator and head coach that his team has not scored a touchdown. So kind of surprised by the result. I think I predicted something in the range of 28-24 when I did my prediction, but obviously I was off on that number, both for the Rams and the Bears. It was a far lower scoring game than I expected and anticipated, but it kind of just goes to show how good that Bears defense really is. It deserves all of the respect that it's getting. Teams are having a hard time throwing the ball. Even running the ball is difficult against Mack and Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman, Leonard Floyd. So they have a lot of good players up front, and really it was a poor matchup for the Rams. Sean McVay said after the game multiple times that this loss was on him. He was the reason that they fell short. He didn't put players in positions to have success and really go out there and have a productive game offensively against the Bears, whereas the defense played well, and it was just Sean McVay's side that didn't hold up its end of the bargain for one of the very few times this season. It didn't work out for whatever reason. Jared Goff was part of that in a big way. He really struggled against this Bears defense. Didn't have any success throwing underneath, throwing downfield, even those intermediate routes that he's so accustomed to hitting regularly and routinely. He missed on those. He finished the game 20 of 44 for 180 yards, four interceptions, and a 19.1 passer rating. So those are really some of the worst numbers he's ever posted in his career. And it just goes to show how good that Bears defense was on Sunday night. Todd Gurley wasn't much better, 28 yards on 11 carries. He had a long carry of 12 yards. He also had a couple he had 1 9-yard run and an 11-yard carry. So out of those three, it was, 32 yards? And his other 8 carries went for minus 4. So there were a lot of tackles for loss, not much yardage gained, and just an unproductive game for the offense all around. The defense did play well. They held Chicago to 294 yards. 194 of those came on the ground, which is obviously a concern. Mark Barron played poorly again. Corey Littleton struggled to get off of blocks. Really just wasn't a productive game as far as the run defense goes, but the secondary played really well. Mitchell Trubisky only had 110 yards passing. He was sacked once by John Franklin Myers. It was a good game from the secondary. They picked him off 3 times. There's no denying the fact that Nickell Robey-Coleman, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, they all played really well. It was just it was a shaky performance for the offense, and really never got anything going. That leaves the Rams 11-2. They're tied with the Saints for the best record in the NFL as well as the Chiefs. But as far as the NFC goes, they do lose a tiebreaker to the Saints because they lost in New Orleans early in their season. So New Orleans once again has the number one seed. The Rams are number two. The Bears are number three right now and still have a chance to catch the Rams. Again, we'll get into the clinching scenarios a little bit later. But a lot of people have wondered if the Chicago Bears showed a blueprint to beating the Rams and whether Los Angeles is vulnerable now. I don't know if I would go that far. The Bears are a rare team in the fact that they have a guy like Khalil Mack on the edge. Akeem Hicks is just a dominant player inside, despite not getting a lot of the recognition that he deserves. And then the secondary is full of ball hawks. You have Eddie Jackson, Adrian Amos, Kyle Fuller had had an interception. Just a really, really strong performance from that defense, and it's not a defense that a lot of teams have. The Saints don't have those playmakers. The Cowboys are obviously a very good defense with that secondary, and then they have DeMarcus Lawrence up front with Randy Gregory. Those linebackers are great. So I would say they're similar to the Bears. And then the Vikings, I wouldn't say, are much of a threat to the Rams. And the Seahawks, the Rams have already beaten twice. But it's not that the NFC is looking like a difficult gauntlet for the Rams to go through where they can't come out of it and reach the Super Bowl. It's just not shaping up well for them because of the teams that are currently in the NFC playoff picture. So you have the Saints who already beat the Rams. You have the Seahawks who are, if the Rams face them again in the playoffs, it'll be their third time. And we all know how difficult it's going to be to beat a team three times in one season. The Cowboys, like I said, are a similar team to Chicago. Decent quarterback, good running game. That defense really gets after the ball and swarms to the ball carriers. And then the Vikings, who beat the Rams last year and played them tough this season. So not a lot of easy games per se in the NFC right now for the Rams. It's just they're going to have their work cut out for them if once they do reach the postseason, and hopefully the games are going to be at home where they can lock up that number two seed, and it's either going to go through LA or the Superdome with the Saints. So that'll be a big factor, getting out of the cold, potentially cold games in Chicago or in Seattle. Not that the Rams would play an away game against the Seahawks because they already clinched the NFC West, but just getting a home game and getting in an environment where they can succeed will be huge. So moving on to this upcoming game against the Eagles, that's going to be another Sunday night game. The Rams are favored. They opened the week at 9.5 point favorites. That line is probably going to move with the news that Carson Wentz is not expected to play. That broke on Wednesday, with Ian Rappaport sharing that news on Twitter. He said that Wentz could potentially miss the rest of the season for the Eagles with some sort of back issue that he's been limited in practice a few times going back to October. So it's not like this is something new for him. It might just be a matter of the Eagles being just about out of the playoff race unless they win the rest of their games. And it seems like maybe the Eagles just want to protect their franchise quarterback and not risk further injury in a game against a really aggressive Rams defense with Aaron Donald, Dominican Sue, and Michael Brockers up front. So it won't be Wentz against the Rams this weekend. Obviously, last year, Wentz suffered that torn ACL against the Rams, had to miss part of that game. Nick Foles led them to the victory. So it'll be Foles again this weekend against Jared Goff. That obviously bodes well for the Rams, even though he is a Super Bowl MVP. It's far easier facing a backup quarterback than it is someone like Wentz. The Rams have never lost back-to-back games under Sean McVay in the regular season. Every time they've dropped a game, they've bounced back and won. They did that this year against when they lost to the Saints. They came back and won the following week. Five times last season they did that. So really, they're setting up nicely to rebound from this loss to Chicago and then rip off three straight wins to close out the season against the Eagles, Cardinals, and then the 49ers in week 17. So looking good on that front. But that's not to say this Eagles team is just an easy out where the Rams can play lackadaisical and get away with sloppy play again like they had against the Bears. This is a defensive line that's really aggressive. You have Fletcher Cox, you have Michael Bennett, Brandon Graham on the edge. So there's a lot of playmakers on that defensive line. Even if Tim Jernigan doesn't play, that's a defense that can really get after the quarterback. And we saw them do that against Dak Prescott on Sunday, in the Eagles' loss to the Cowboys. So this isn't an easy defense to take lightly. Even without Carson Wentz, you don't want to take anything for granted if you're the Rams. You need this win. You have to try to regain that momentum going into the final two games of the season and then eventually the playoffs. So you can't afford to lose an ugly game like this to the Eagles, who are really just decimated by injuries right now. They're going to be without four starters in the secondary. Guys like Rodney McLeod, Ronald Darby, Jalen Mills, they're all out. So this is going to be a game for Jared Goff to really have a nice bounce back performance against a secondary that's going to be playing most of their backups. So it's a favorable matchup for him. We saw Dak Prescott have a huge game, which almost never happens, on Sunday. So this is a good matchup for Jared Goff to really regain his confidence, get things back on track on the offense, and start playing well again like he did before the bye week. In the past 2 weeks, he's really struggled, completing less than 50% of his passes, only has one touchdown, five interceptions. So everything about his play the past 2 weeks has been very different from the first 11 games of the season when he looked like an MVP candidate. That fire has burned out a little bit, and I don't think he's going to have a chance to be most valuable player. But he does have a good opportunity to finish the year strong and keep the momentum going towards the postseason. So as far as the salary cap goes, I mentioned that before. The NFL did release its projections. It's going to go up to a range of $187 million to $191.1 million. That's up from $177.2 million this year. So it's going to be a little bit of an increase. It's a sixth straight year. It's expected to rise. So much for a dying game, huh? Really, that it doesn't impact the Rams in a huge way. They're expected to have about $37 million to $41 million in cap space before making any moves in the offseason. So they do have some leeway despite signing Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks, Rob Havenstein, Aaron Donald, all these players to contracts this offseason. They are still in pretty good shape despite having those cap hits go on the books for the upcoming year. As far as what that means for potential cap casualties, you could see Mark Barron possibly be among them. He's a guy who has really struggled this season, and even going back to last season, just hasn't played well enough to warrant his salary. And really, the Rams can release him for almost no penalty. So in 2019, his cap hit is going to be $9.66 million. But the Rams can cut him and save about $6 million. So that's one potential move. And then another is Aqib Talib, who is on the books for $8 million, and the Rams can cut him for no penalty and get that $8 million back. Assuming that he plays well in the final few weeks, I can't really imagine the Rams moving on from him, especially with the struggles that Marcus Peters has had throughout the season when Talib is not there. So I really expect him to be back next year. There aren't too many other guys who I would consider potential cap casualties. Really, the contracts that the Rams have on the books are pretty favorable as far as the salary cap goes. So I don't foresee them making a ton of moves as far as releasing veteran players. You're not going to see someone like Andrew Whitworth released or Marcus Peters cut on his fifth-year option. So those are just a couple of names to watch for as far as cap casualties go. Free agency is another topic. You have quite a few players who are set to hit the open market next year. The top guys, of course, are Dominican Sue, Joyner, Roger Saffold, and then Dante Fowler Jr., who the Rams traded for this year. He's played pretty well in those games so far this season, so I don't really foresee the Rams letting him walk unless he signs just a massive contract somewhere else. Giving up what they did, those mid-round picks, you don't really want to let those kind of players go for nothing. Sure, they would get probably a third or fourth round compensatory pick in return for Fowler leaving in the offseason. But given the way that he's played, he's only 25 years old. I would think he's going to be one of their top priorities for the upcoming offseason to re-sign. You do have Malcolm Brown, who's a restricted free agent. Same goes for Troy Hill. I would expect both of those guys to probably be back. Morgan Fox, Corey Littleton, also restricted free agents. I would expect them to probably be back. Littleton for sure. Morgan Fox probably. So there are quite a few decisions that the Rams have to make. Not all of them are as difficult as another, but they are still decisions that they have to make nonetheless. So just a little bit of a preview for that. Again, the salary cap rising is something expected from teams, so it's not like it's going to change their plans at all. It's just good to get some clarity on what the range could potentially be next year, with the cap rising. As far as the Rams this year go, the offensive line in the past few weeks has really struggled. PFF put out a tweet showing kind of how they've regressed in the past 4 weeks, really just the past three games. And in that span, they've allowed the fourth most pressures, and they have the third worst pass blocking efficiency. So Jared Goff isn't getting much help from his offensive line. You've seen him really scrambling more often and struggling to read the field in the past 2 or 3 weeks against the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Bears. And in those three games, he's taken 18 hits, which is six per game, and he's been sacked 10 times, which is 3 and a quarter per game, or 3 and a third per game. And then in the first 10 games of the season, he was only hit 42 times and sacked 19 times, which is substantially lower than the rate that he's been taken down in the past three games. So the offensive line definitely has to be better. You're going to face a relentless pass rush in the Eagles this weekend. Not like I said, it's not like it's a very difficult team because of the way that the secondary is beat up and the linebackers aren't exactly strong. But you do have to provide good protection for Goff to allow those routes downfield to develop and for him to have time to hit those receivers on those crossing routes that he loves, those deep comebacks. So the pass blocking definitely has to improve. Todd Gurley has still had success in the past few games when he has gotten touches. Obviously, he was eliminated against the Chiefs, and then he only got 11 carries against the Bears on Sunday, but against the Lions, he had a really good game, found the end zone twice, and had over 155 yards of total offense. So that's kind of the game that the Rams have to get back to because the offensive line has really struggled to protect Goff in the pocket, and it's had a big impact on the offense as a whole. Another topic for discussion that has been talked about this week following the Bears' loss is Sean McVay's timeout usage. He was on the Coach McVay show on ESPN with J.B. Long talking about it, and he admitted that he has to be better. It's something that he can't afford to do. He's burning timeouts left and right against the Bears. I think it was with about 11 minutes left in the game. He burned a timeout on back-to-back plays. So he called a timeout. The Rams had a false start. They ran a play, which was an incompletion. The play clock was running down on the next play. And he called another timeout 3 seconds later. So you can't be burning timeouts like that, especially in a close game against a team like the Bears, where time is of the essence. And really, it was a two possession game late. And when you don't have timeouts, that makes it difficult to get the ball back, even if the Rams did score a touchdown and make it a one possession game. So that's something that he needs to clean up. Mike Sando of ESPN shared a tweet this week about the Rams and how they're the worst team when it comes to timeout usage. In only 30% of the games, they've had all three timeouts in their pocket with 5 minutes left in the game. For comparison, the next closest team is the Seahawks at 33%. Then it goes up to the Redskins, the Packers, and the Saints at 38.5%. The best team is the Colts at 92%. So 92% of the time in these games, the Colts have all three timeouts left with 5 minutes remaining in the game. You don't always use all of those, and Sean McVay talked about how you can't carry over those timeouts to the next game. Like, you can't leave them in your pocket, so you might as well use them to get yourself out of bad situations. But at the same time, if you're in a one possession game and there's 2:30 left in the on the clock and you only have one timeout, chances are you're not going to get the ball back. The team picks up one first down and the game's over. So if you save those timeouts, you do have a better chance of getting the ball back and really lengthening the game rather than burning them in situations where you really shouldn't be. You shouldn't, after taking a timeout, you shouldn't have a false start and then an incompletion and then have the play clock run down again. That's unacceptable. McVay will admit that. It's just something that they can't afford to have happen. So that's something that definitely has to be cleaned up as far as McVay's strategy goes, and he knows it. He's admitted it, and hopefully it is something that we see cleaned up down the road, especially in the postseason. If you're going to be in a close game with the Bears, with the Cowboys, with the Saints, you're going to need all the time that you can get. If it is a one possession game and you need to get the ball back for your offense, it's extremely difficult to get off the field when you don't have those timeouts in your back pocket. So hopefully that's something that McVay can improve on, even just a little bit, just to have a little bit more control over his timeout usage and some sense of awareness in that regard. And finally, just the clinching scenarios really quick. So the Rams do have the number two seed right now. They do have a two game advantage on the Bears. So because of that, they can't clinch the number two seed with just a win. They need some help. So in order to do that, they need to beat the Eagles this weekend, and then the Bears have to lose on Sunday, for that to happen. Either that or the Rams can tie the Eagles, and then if the Bears lose, the Rams still clinch the number two seed, first round bye. And then they can still work towards the number one seed in the and home field advantage in the NFC. So really, it's a simple scenario. As long as the Rams win and the Bears lose, they're going to be the number two seed, which will go a long way towards determining whether they want to rest players or if they want to kind of just take it easy on Todd Gurley down the stretch. So that's a clinching scenario for Week 15, and that's going to do it for today's show. As always, if you guys have any questions about the Rams, feel free to reach out on Twitter at Cam DeSilva. You can ask me anything. I believe my DMs are open, so even if you want to shoot me a message there, feel free. Going into Eagles Week, be sure to follow us at the Rams Wire. You can even follow our brother site at the Eagles Wire on Twitter. They're going to have good coverage for this game. This pivotal Week 15 matchup for the Eagles, who are falling out of contention pretty quickly. So, have a good week, guys. We'll talk to you next week after hopefully a Rams win, and then we'll look towards the postseason when the time comes.